you know anyone who has fatty liver disease? It's often linked to adults, even adult alcoholics, but there is a non-alcoholic form of it too, and it might surprise you to learn it is becoming more prevalent in children. It's estimated that 10% or 1 in 10 children have fatty liver disease. And we're going to discuss how this could be and how the condition can be prevented and treated. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, September 19th. A recent article in the Wall Street Journal alerted us to this issue, and we have posted that article on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And we invited a doctor to talk with you about fatty liver disease. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call if you have a question, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dr. Adnan Saeed. He is a gastroenterologist with UW Health. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So what exactly is fatty liver disease?
So fatty liver disease is a kind of chronic liver disease that is related to the obesity epidemic that you mentioned. We commonly call it non-alcoholic fatty liver disease to distinguish it from alcohol-induced fatty liver disease, which looks very similar if you biopsy the liver in both cases. But in the case of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, it is due to obesity. It can be a progressive and a chronic liver disease in these individuals.
What does it do to the liver?
So, In some cases, the fat remains static in the liver and does not progress for many years. But in a certain proportion of individuals, it is a progressive disease. It can cause inflammation in the liver, which can lead to scar tissue in the liver. And in some individuals, this can lead to the condition called cirrhosis of the liver. Cirrhosis is not an uncommon condition, and fatty liver disease, unfortunately, is becoming one of the commonest causes of cirrhosis in the United States. In fact, in the last decade or so, fatty liver disease is now the third commonest indication for liver transplantation in adults, and in children, it is the commonest cause of chronic liver disease.
Well, what are the symptoms of fatty liver disease?
So that's a good question, and often there are none. So the important question is, who should get screened for fatty liver disease? Who's at risk, or should we wait until symptoms develop? If there are symptoms, they can be very vague. It often presents with fatigue, and that's the most common symptoms. Some patients may have pain in the area where the liver is, which is right under the ribs on the right side of the body. And this would be a sort of a dull kind of pain, not a sharp pain that wakes you up or distresses you enough to go to the emergency room, more of a discomfort. But at least half, if not more, of individuals do not have any symptoms, at least in the early stages. Of course, by the time you get cirrhosis, then there are complications that can develop, including bloating of the abdomen or the belly from water filling in, getting jaundice. But that's a pretty late stage, and you know, I would hate to see patients come in at that stage.
Well, so who should be screened for this?
So that's again a very tantalizing question, and there are no good guidelines because there is no evidence as to who the best person to screen for this condition is. This condition was not even recognized as a separate condition from alcohol until 1980 in kids about 3 years later. So long-term consequences of this are just becoming known. Mm-hmm. Certainly, kids that are obese are at high risk. And if there is morbid obesity, then they are at exceedingly high risk. So, as you mentioned, the obesity epidemic is exploding in the United States, where 1 in 10 kids are obese. And those obese kids, 4 out of 10 will have fatty liver disease, at least in some studies. So, for me at least, that's a group that should warrant some kind of screening. Pediatricians do recommend screening obese kids for diabetes, as well as for cholesterol and fat. And those are two conditions that are commonly associated with fatty liver disease as well. So it makes sense to screen kids with that with diabetes, cholesterol issues, and significant obesity for fatty liver disease.
Well, this certainly shocked us, or surprised us anyway, in the producer's office when we saw this article. Have you been seeing this as a growing problem?
Oh yes, definitely. We 10 years ago we saw fatty liver disease significantly, but now it is overwhelming our practice with new referrals for this condition. Part of it is the exploding epidemic. Part of it is increased recognition by primary care physicians and pediatricians. And so we are seeing this at the early stages, which is good, but we are also seeing this in the late stages, sometimes in adolescents and oftentimes in adults as well at the stage of cirrhosis.
What exactly is happening? Why is the obesity epidemic linked with the fatty liver disease epidemic?
So that's a great question, and it's a subject of a lot of research these days. And there's multiple theories. We are all genetically programmed to get fat, so that's the human condition. But our genes haven't changed, in the time that the obesity has changed. So I think that's just the background. We sort of evolved as hunter-gatherers, where our bodies were crafty and knew how to store calories well. Now that our lifestyle has changed and our diets have changed, where we are eating these extremely calorie-dense foods, and we are suffering the consequences of our dietary changes. So I think the major changes that we have seen in the last three decades or so is in what we eat, where we eat it from, who is feeding us, and what kind of foods are available to our kids. What we're eating is very calorie dense, not necessarily good nutrition, and that includes junk food as well as pre-prepared food, as well as things that are available in the supermarket as well as at schools, unfortunately. The other aspect of this is our lifestyle has become more sedentary. So kids and adults are spending a lot more time in front of the TV, more time on the internet, and more time playing games, and not as much in physical exercise as either part of their daily lives or as time built in for exercise. And I think an important macro level thing that people have not concentrated so far on is changes in our environment, in our neighborhoods where we live. Are our neighborhoods planned appropriately? And urban sprawl has a lot to do with it. Can you get to places where you need to get by walking, such as the grocery stores? Are neighborhoods a safe place for walking? Are they good sidewalks or not? And I think all these three conditions, the diet, the physical activity, and our built environment are making us more obese and leading to fatty liver disease.
We'll talk more about that as we go along. But is the liver actually getting fat? I mean, what is the overeating and not exercising is causing the liver to get as fat as our bellies? Is that what's going on?
That's exactly right. So in a normal liver, there may be some fat, but no more than 5% of the total weight of the liver. Anything more than that is called fatty liver disease. And severe fatty liver disease is when more than 2/3 of the liver becomes fatty, so there is actual fat replacing the liver cells or inside the liver cells. And unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of that condition. It is very closely linked to obesity, especially what we call truncal obesity, where fat is laid down in the belly. So it is strongly associated with increased waist size, especially increased waist size compared to hip ratio. We're seeing more of this in boys and girls, both. And there are some strong familial risks as well.
And if we lose weight, the liver will lose weight too?
The liver will lose fat. So, yes, absolutely. That is the most effective therapy. Exercise is the best medicine for this condition, better than any pill or other therapy out there. And if we are able to lose weight, even as little as 5% of body weight through a combination of exercise and changes in diet, then the liver will lose the fat. So this is a completely treatable condition with these therapies.
We are talking about fatty liver disease and a new story that tells us that 1 in 10 children today have fatty liver disease, which is a liver disease usually associated with adult alcoholics. We're talking about why this is and what can be done about it. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 21 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, September 19th. We are talking with a doctor about fatty liver disease. And we wonder if you know someone who suffers from fatty liver disease, maybe even a child who has been diagnosed with fatty liver disease. 1 in 10 children today have fatty liver disease. It is linked to obesity. Among obese children, 40% have fatty liver disease. We're talking about why this is and what can be done about it, and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Adnan Saeed. He is a gastroenterologist with UW Health. Tim on Facebook writes, I've read that a mixed up ratio between glucose and fructose in high fructose corn syrup, he goes on to say, is perhaps what is resulting in a fatty liver. Can you talk about that, Dr. Saeed?
Yes, so that's certainly an interesting question. And there is some evidence that the kinds of sugars that we are eating is contributing in large extent to fatty liver disease. Part of the problem leading to obesity is the change in our diet, and it is to do with using more sugar. So it is fructose to some extent. We are all eating a lot more fructose, either as added sweeteners to almost all kinds of foods that you find in the supermarket, as well as a sweetener that is used instead of cane sugar or sucrose, and that fructose is in the form of high fructose corn syrup. There's a lot of corn syrup in the United States, which is made cheaply and readily available to companies through subsidies, and using the fructose corn syrup high quantities has been shown to lead to more crunkle obesity, and that in turn leads to more what we call insulin resistance. So as we become more fat around our bellies, the insulin that our pancreas produces is unable to work as effectively, and that leads to fat being laid down in the liver, as well as other consequences. So definitely diet has a huge role. Fructose is probably one of the culprits, but it's all kinds of sugars, all kinds of simple sugars, including regular cane sugar. So we're eating a lot of sugar-sweetened food as well as beverages, and I think they are all equally to blame.
Let's take a call from Mike in Oshkosh. Hello, Mike, you're on the air.
Hello, hi, good morning. Hi, good morning.
Let me see here. I had a speaker here. Okay. My remark is towards this is I was diagnosed with a fatty liver disease. I went in with pains in my rib cage, like he had said, and some of the pains actually were pretty bad. Where there were points where, you know, I was almost doubled over with it. And the first question he asked is if I drink a lot, and I actually don't. But what I did consume a lot of was Coca-Cola. And I guess the doctor said that, you know, the sugars in that metabolize or something similar to what alcohol would. Yes. And since then, I've cut down my soda content, you know, from probably 6 to 8 cans a day to 1. Mm-hmm. And needless to say, you know, my cholesterol and the pains have subsided pretty much.
Well, good. Super. I'm glad for you, Mike. So what do you think, Dr. Saeed? Diet Coke can be as bad as drinking a lot of booze? Or not Diet Coke, regular Coke, I guess.
I'm glad you're doing so well, Mike, and that was a really important change that you made. So one can of regular soda has a lot of sugar. It has 9 teaspoons of sugar in just one can, and so you're drinking 6 to 8 cans a day. That's a lot of added sugar that you're taking besides eating food. And so cutting that down was absolutely the best thing you could have done. And then the excess sugar that we don't need immediately for burning as energy to do our daily activities and exercise, that is stored in the body, that is converted in the body into fat or triglycerides. And that is exactly what is laid down in our bellies and in the liver and fatty liver disease. So this excess sugar in all forms is extremely bad. It can be in the form of sodas, it can be in the form of muffins and bagels, all of which are extremely dense carbohydrates. So I always tell my patients, limit your simple carbohydrates or simple sugars, both in sodas and as well as in the other kinds of food we just talked about. So that is absolutely the first step.
I know Mike also wondered if there could be a genetic link. Could it be hereditary?
There definitely is a genetic link. We know that from simple studies where in families the parents are overweight or obese, the kids are also more likely to be overweight and obese. And there are very interesting studies showing in twins where the twins were separated at birth, and so they never lived together. So the environment where they grew up was very different, yet the incidence of fatty liver disease was pretty similar. So there is a genetic link which may explain up to a third of the inclination of propensity to develop fatty liver disease. There are also ethnic differences in populations. So the genes in certain populations make it more likely that you store excess energy as fat if you are consuming excess energy. And so the highest risk is seen in Hispanics or Hispanic Americans. Caucasian or white Americans have sort of intermediate risk, and African Americans have the lowest risk of fatty liver disease, although they have the highest risk of obesity. Fatty liver disease is lower in them, but that is relatively speaking. It is a condition that is increasing in all three ethnic groups, but there is definitely a genetic risk, and we do know some of the genes that are associated with it. We don't routinely check for them because there's not too much you can do to change your genetics, but we are aware of some of them, and there's a lot of more research going on.
Marianne in Madison wants to know, is fatty liver disease always a part of the progression to cirrhosis of the liver?
So absolutely not. It is in its earliest stages a very reversible disease. It is a slowly progressive disease, and in some people it does not progress at all. So the fat in the liver remains as fat. Only in a certain proportion of patients, maybe a quarter of patients, 25 to 30%, does it progress to inflammation, scarring, and then in some of those patients then can go on to develop cirrhosis and end-stage liver disease. So who's at risk? if you have diabetes, especially poorly controlled diabetes, you are high at risk. As you get older, your risk goes up. So kids that grow up with fatty liver disease, as they get older, they are at high risk as well. But it's not only the liver disease that's an issue. Fatty liver disease is very strongly associated with excess risk of cardiovascular disease, strokes, as well as the risk of certain cancers. And all of these conditions improve if you lose weight.
Let me hold you there because we have news from NPR coming up, then Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about fatty liver disease, what it is, what it does, what can be done to prevent it and to treat it. Talking about this because a news story points out that 1 in 10 children today have fatty liver disease, which is a disease that's usually associated with adult alcoholics. We're talking about it, and we'll continue after the news. A recent article in the Wall Street Journal alerted us that fatty liver disease is becoming prevalent in children. 1 in 10 children today have fatty liver disease. We are talking with a guest physician about why and what can be done about it. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, September 19th. We welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have provided a link to that article in the Wall Street Journal on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So do you know anyone who has fatty liver disease? It's a disease that is linked to adults primarily, adult alcoholics, but there is a non-alcoholic form of it too. And many are concerned that more and more children have fatty liver disease. 40% of obese children have fatty liver disease, and we are talking about what can be done about this. Our guest is Dr. Adnan Saeed. He is a gastroenterologist with UW Health, and we have Tong on Facebook who says, "Eat healthy. Bad liver, bad knees, bad heart, bad this, bad that in kids. Feed them good food." So is it as simple as that, Dr. Saeed?
It is as simple as that, but these are behavioral changes which are not easy to implement. And so, although the treatment is seemingly cheap and easy and there's no medication, it does require motivation and a lifelong change, and it requires a lot of support to do those. So it takes, for kids, it takes the support of their parents, the support of their school, and changes in diet, spending more time outside exercising and less time in front of the TV are key behaviors that have to change. And the earlier in life they change, the less problems they will have, health problems they will have when they grow up.
Now, the article in the Wall Street Journal did certainly tie the condition's rise to the obesity epidemic. But it says that the disease appears to be growing among normal weight children, too. Why would that be?
So, although by and large, we see the increased incidence in obese children, you're right, it is increasing in all children. So in normal weight children, maybe 5% of them may have this condition, which is still shockingly high. And that again, is to do to some extent with the diet as well. So although these children may not be obese, they are still eating diets that may not be as good for their bodies and their livers as a regular healthy diet would be. So they still are at some risk, although nowhere near the risk as compared to those kids who become overweight or obese as well. There are also some genetic conditions that should be checked by a physician to make sure that a normal weight kid who develops fatty liver disease does not have those conditions. And then there can be certain endocrine conditions like thyroid disease. Some kids have growth hormone deficiencies, ovarian problems, and some kids have genetic problems in lipids or fat processing in their body. Although these are less common conditions than obesity-related, definitely if any child has normal weight and develops fat in the liver, I would definitely screen for these conditions and do a complete examination regarding those. So if somebody is, especially if the child is not growing tall as well and has any other issues, then we become even more aware of these conditions. So there are multiple other conditions that can lead to fatty liver disease.
How long does it take, Dr. Saeed, for a, I don't know, a healthy liver to go bad?
To go bad?
Yeah, to become a diseased liver that may need to be transplanted.
It's a long process. So we're lucky there that if this is preventable to a large extent, or if identified early, that at least the consequences are preventable and it can be reversible. It takes, on average, a liver that just develops fat. Let's say we find somebody who has just developed fat. We do a liver biopsy. There's no scar tissue in there. And if that person is at risk of getting cirrhosis, it'll take 20 years or more before they develop cirrhosis on average. So that's great that it is slowly progressive. There are genetic susceptibilities in some people where they progress faster, and that's a small proportion. And we see that in some people after transplantation for fatty liver disease, that they develop fat and sometimes rarely, but sometimes even cirrhosis within a few years after getting a new liver. So there are some individual differences, but by and large, it is pretty slowly progressive.
Let's take a call from Bob in Baldwin. Hello, Bob. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Joy and Doctor. See, a few years ago, I saw a YouTube discussion by a Dr. Robert Lustig, L-U-S-T-I-G, and it was at either UC Davis or Berkeley, and it was called Sugar, the Bitter Truth, and you can Google that. And then he has a book, I think he has a book by that name, but he has another book called Fat Chance, Beating the Odds Against Sugar and Processed Food. The main point, though, if you watch through these videos and or read the book, is that he's a biochemist, and from the biochemical side, he equates sugar. First of all, he goes through the glucose route down in the liver and shows how it's processed throughout the body, but unique to high fructose corn syrup and alcohol is the processing in the liver, and he shows that the same chemical reactions in the body are the same for alcohol as they are for high fructose corn syrup. That's just my comments.
Is that true, Dr. Saeed?
I think that's an excellent point, Bob. And yes, to a large extent, it is true. When excess sugars are metabolized in a pretty similar way to alcohol, which is also a kind of sugar. So alcohol is also a kind of sugar, and that's why they lead to similar conditions in the liver in certain individuals, and the high fructose corn syrup may have a lot to do with it. There's some interesting observations during prohibition when you know alcohol was banned in the U.S. Obesity increased, especially in people who were drinking moonshine, and that was predominantly made from corn. So, and again, that's where fructose corn syrup came from. And so there's an interesting natural experiment in that way as well. And then, of course, working in the lab, people have found similar things. And so if somebody has non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, I do tell them to limit their alcohol use as well, because, as Bob mentioned correctly, the alcohol is processed in the same way in the liver. So it is like kind of putting fuel on a fire. If you already have fatty liver disease from obesity, if you're drinking excessive alcohol. So limiting alcohol is important in the matter as well, and I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But some say that the high fructose corn syrup that you find in so many sweetened products metabolizes differently than plain old sugar. Do you find that to be true?
I think there is some interesting evidence in the lab to suggest that that is true. Some of the experiments that are done in humans, they are somewhat flawed because we are taking in a lot more fructose corn syrup than we normally would take any sugar because there's too much of it in everything we're eating. But in the lab, when you look at fructose specifically, it is more prone to be converted to fat. It is more prone to lay down in the belly as fat and be converted to fat. And it is more prone to have us develop inflammation in the liver as well as in our blood vessels as well when it's taken in excess. So yeah, there certainly is some evidence. But I think fructose is not the only culprit. I think it's all sugars as well. So if you're eating excess sugar and there's no fructose in there, I would still be very careful about the diet.
Well, and then Matt from Appleton asks, what about pizza? With people more rushed, a pizza, a really dense food, is that something we can blame? Well, I'm thinking of the, I guess, the carbohydrate, the crust, if we're eating a lot of starches like that.
Certainly, the carbohydrates, unrefined flour, so if pizza is made from white, unrefined flour, then it does put you at risk. Now, anything in moderation is just fine. But if pizza is basically the major part of your diet, then that's not a healthy choice per se, but occasionally eating, I think it's fine. If you're eating carbohydrates, and everybody does need carbohydrates, using more refined grains or whole wheat is healthier than flour as well. But everything in moderation is fine as part of a balanced diet. You know, we need some fat. We need 25 to 30% of our diet to be fat. We need some carbohydrate, at least half, and should be in the form of more refined grains. And then we need more protein. And definitely in individuals that do develop fatty liver disease, one of the things we tell them is, besides reducing the calories you're taking, at least for a while, to lose weight, you should try to reduce your sugar load, your carbohydrate load, which would include less pizza, and increase the amount of protein you're taking along with exercise.
We're talking about preventing, treating fatty liver disease, which is becoming more prevalent in children. And we're welcoming your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we are talking about fatty liver disease, what it does, what can be done to prevent it, to treat it, and talking about the fact that it's becoming more prevalent in children. 1 in 10 children today have fatty liver disease. It is linked to obesity, but that's not the only cause. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your experiences, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Adnan Saeed. He's a gastroenterologist with UW Health. Kim emails and wants you to explain the definition of processed foods. I guess you, did you use that term, Dr. Saeed?
I may have. So processed food to me means food that is pre-prepared and usually mass-produced in a factory where you're not making it yourself at home. So as opposed to food where you would buy the raw materials, the meat, the fruit, and the vegetables, then make it yourself. And so processed foods often have a lot of added ingredients. They are changed a lot from what normally food looks like in its raw form, and they have added ingredients to basically make them more palatable and sometimes more appealing, especially to kids. And so that includes things like nuggets. So there's no nugget growing on a chicken anywhere, but it's a highly processed food with hundreds of ingredients in it. And these are extremely calorie-dense foods. They have a lot of high fructose corn syrup, or they have a lot of salt. They have a lot of sugar in general. And so these are extremely heavily processed, much more so than if you make that food yourself. Does that help?
Mm-hmm. Carol in Madison is with us now. Hi, Carol.
Hi. My question is about fatty liver disease in adults and what it looks like to somebody who's just a casual observer. I occasionally see people who, men in particular, who are otherwise slender but look like they, if they were a woman, I would think they were pregnant. Could that be a liver disease?
The beer belly.
Yeah, well, not. It's beyond a beer belly. Yeah. It's a huge protruding belly.
Yeah. So it possibly is, but it is not a very sensitive sign of identifying fatty liver disease. So there are multiple causes for the belly to be distended, some of which are possibly linked to a disease, and many of which are not. So it may be natural inclination in some people to gain more weight. So they may have crumpled obesity, yet overall their body weight may not be high. That is still a risk for developing fatty liver disease, as well as diabetes and heart disease. Of course, people with certain illnesses develop bloating or distension. It could be water in the belly, which is linked with cirrhosis sometimes. And so again, in most cases of fatty liver disease, there is overall obesity. The belly is bigger, but generally they're not lean overall, the individuals.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Carol, for the call. Let's take another call from Susan in Waukesha. Hi, Susan.
Hey. I'm just calling to see if doctors ever heard anything about taking cinnamon to help promote sugar metabolism.
So I think, yes, I have. There's some evidence that using cinnamon, other antioxidants, may have some beneficial effects, but I think it's fine to do these things in moderation. You have to be really careful with natural supplements and herbs, because everything that you take does have to be processed through the liver. It's the biggest metabolic factory in our body that processes everything, and some of those things can be injurious to the liver. Cinnamon sounds fine. I don't think there's at this point the level of data we have to say that it should be taken almost like a medication on a daily basis, but as part of your diet, it's probably fine. If somebody does have fatty liver disease, they do need, I would strongly encourage them to see their physician to talk about, what they can do in their diet, physical activity, and there are certain medications that can be occasionally used for this as well. But be careful about supplements. And, cinnamon sounds fine, but even things like green tea extract have been found to be injurious to the liver. So I'm always very careful about herbs and supplements in general.
Well, let's end on some advice for first parents of children to prevent fatty liver disease, especially if you have a child who seems to be prone to being overweight.
So, yeah, I think that is really important. I think for children, it all starts with support at home from the parents. And what can a parent do to prevent fatty liver disease, or if their kid is becoming overweight and obese, to prevent that from happening? I think they can make some really important changes at home. Limiting TV time is exceedingly important. The Pediatric Association recommends no more than 1 to 2 hours a day, and our kids watch far too much more than that. And I include internet use for games and video games as part of that. Encourage them to play outdoors, and the parents should get involved in some of these activities if they can, especially sports or recreational activities or daily activities, physical activities. They can make important changes in their diet because kids model what their parents do. And so if the parents are eating healthy, the kids will be eating healthy too. So watch what they eat, less of the junk food, not eating in front of the TV where it can be easy to gorge without knowing how much you're eating, and less unhealthy snacking. So more regular scheduled meal times and less snacking, or if you are, introduce healthy snacks rather than fast food and junks. And then outside the home, you know, kids spend a lot of time in school, so advocacy in schools is important, and parents and teachers are an important part of that, as far as looking at your school's nutrition program, what's on offer there, if they have a dietitian, and can you talk to them about changes there as well. So I think parents are the key for their kids.
Mm-hmm. And just in our final minute, besides diet and exercise, there is no other treatment of this condition.
There are certain medications that have been shown to be helpful, and there have been some good trials. So vitamin E is a treatment that in high doses can be used to treat fatty liver disease. Now, these treatments were used only in trials for a couple of years, and then the patients were followed only for a year. So we only know, you know, over the course of 2 to 3 years, what improvement we're seeing with vitamin E. And I think if you're not losing weight and you're not exercising and changing your diet, then vitamin E won't make too much of a difference. I would only take the vitamin E on the advice of a physician, because there are certain groups where they are concerned that increased risk of heart disease or prostate. But yeah, only vitamin E is.
Dr. Said, because we're kind of losing you on your phone connection, we'll leave it there. And I want to thank you so much for joining us. And I know I'm going to take better care of my liver. How about you? Thanks to Robin Cherry and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.